Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. This show is for the week of October 25th, 2016. And we are pleased to be joined by our frequent guest, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Very well, D.R. As always, wonderful to have you here. So, D.R., we have there's lots of stories we cover. And I was trying to list them up the other day in my copious free time. I mean, we talk about international treaties. We talk about clean energy. One of the stories we talk about is keeping fossil fuels in the ground. And a subset of that has been something called these pipelines. And one of those pipelines is the Dakota Access Pipeline, which is, of course, out in Dakota, where Native Americans have been opposing it. And then as a subset of that story, there is a journalism story. It turns out that, there's a journalist story, a legal story. D.R., I'll let you tell the story, but it's set up. Remind everybody that in the beginning of September, there was literally a face-off between Native American, the Standing Rock Sioux, who were trying to protest the construction of a pipeline, and essentially paid security guards who had dogs. And they let the dogs attack the protesters. Part of that, and the reason we know about it, that is that a woman named Amy Goodman from the Democracy Now! News Network, I'll call it, was there to videotape the whole thing. And it went viral. And we talked about it on this show. So, DR, let me throw the ball into your court. Tell me, what was the story, the narrative around Amy Goodman and what happened?
Well, after Amy Goodman publicized the brutality that the security force, the sort of Pinkerton style, goons, if you will, that went after the water protectors at the Standing Rock of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, after Amy Goodman reported on it, North Dakota state's attorney Vlad Erickson tried to charge her with criminal trespassing, claiming that she wasn't a journalist, that she was essentially a protester who was, I guess, illegally trespassing upon the territory that was being the target of actual protests. According to Jim Noriakis of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, Mr. Erickson, attorney Erickson, quote, realized that he couldn't make the charge stick, so he dropped the charge and then tried to charge her with participating in a riot, and again used the argument that she wasn't acting as a journalist. And then on October the 17th, North Dakota Judge John Grinsteiner dismissed the riot charges and basically dismissed them for lack of evidence. And Amy Goodman is technically a free woman, although there is a number of reports indicating that the DA may try to concoct some other charge to hit her with. I can imagine that she may be charged with a failure to suck up to the fossil fuel industry, failure to deny science, failure to respect my authority, or something along those lines.
What we have here is failure to communicate. Well, I mean, but she actually left North Dakota and then returned to North Dakota to answer these charges, which was the original trespass. And when she got there, the guy dropped the trespass charge, the DA dropped the trespass charge and upped the ante to a rioting charge, right?
And you know, as we often talk about the issue of hypocrisy, do you remember all the people who were complaining about Marilyn Mosby, the DA in Baltimore, who charged the cops who were involved, who were said to have been involved in the death of Freddie Gray, and how certain people were saying, oh, what an overzealous prosecutor, making up charges, bogus charges, overcharging, out of control prosecutor. Have you noticed how all of those people who complained about Marilyn Mosby, you haven't heard a peep out of them about what this DA is doing? Don't you? Is that one of those, you know, interesting things?
Yeah.
One of those things that make you go,
to use the old Arsenio Hall. It's the story of the dog that didn't bark in the nighttime or something, right? Yeah, I mean, so Amy Goodman went out there. She's now basically, as you say, free to go. I guess in my sense of it is that the There is a, well, at the most basic level, the Standing Rock Sioux are being policed, so to speak, or being opposed by a legally, the police force that has no sympathy and is not very happy with the idea of the Standing Rock Sioux protesting, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, is sort of a new circumstance for climate protesters. I mean, here in Massachusetts, we've had people arrested down in Fall River for the lobster boat trial, right? Mm-hmm. And they were let go by the DA chose not to prosecute. I've had friends be arrested in Washington, D.C. They're in jail for an hour and then they're let out. There are ongoing protests in West Roxbury, which all of it requires great courage to do no matter what, right? But typically it's a short cycle. You go to Nebraska and those cops aren't fooling around, right?
Yeah.
It's a different circumstance, and the support that the Standing Rock Sioux need, I think, is a different order of magnitude, would you say?
And yes, and Amy Goodman has been exemplary in covering that, covering issues of Native American protesters being harassed, in some cases strip searched for no reason at all, cavity searched for no reason at all. It's just ghastly to think about what is going on and how, you know, it appears that law enforcement officials in Nebraska are sort of taking the side of the proponents of the North Dakota Access Pipeline instead of, you know, protecting and serving. It's like, you know, who are they protecting and serving? Who polices the police? Who guards the guardians?
Exactly. No, I agree. I mean, and I think it's a story that has to be watched, because again, you only get sort of hints and allegations, right? You see pictures, but I mean, there's guys standing around with assault weapons and the whole area is roadblocked off. And of course they're out in the middle of the plains. So anyway, I mean, quite a story, but that's not the only story. We were speaking before about another woman who has been charged with a felony, which is a serious business, right?
A horrifying story. Delia Schlossberg, who's a producer who works with Josh Fox of the Gasland movies, according to the Huffington Post, she was detained while filming a protest against TransCanada's Keystone Pipeline in Walhalla, North Dakota. Activists at the event shut down the pipeline, which carries oil from Canadian tar sands to the United States, for about 7 hours. She has been charged with three felonies: conspiracy to theft of property, conspiracy to theft of services, and conspiracy to tampering with or damaging a public service. Together, the charges face a maximum of 45 years. This is according to Josh Fox, again, with whom she works, a clear effort to ignore the First Amendment and to intimidate anybody who is performing in a journalistic capacity, depicting, you know, what is going on in terms of these protests. He is passed around a petition to try to get these charges dropped. It's been signed by, among others, Daryl Hannah and Neil Young and Bill McKibben and Mark Ruffalo and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Tim DeChristopher, who, as we recall, was thrown in prison unfairly for 2.5 years for a similar act of civil disobedience, even though there was not technically a journalistic act what he did. Just a horrific and disgusting story of somebody who could well turn out to be quite literally a political prisoner in the United States.
So, I mean, what's I guess the trend here is that as climate hawks and the climate movement gain more success and more power, the stiffening of the spine on the part of the fossil fuel industry, and kind of, I have to admit, it's the cultural defense of the way of life. I mean, I don't think the state police in North Dakota, God bless them, are being paid by ExxonMobil, right? But it represents, the Standing Rock Sioux represent a deep threat. In addition to all the cultural issues, it represents a threat to a way of life. And those kinds of clashes will intensify going forward, don't you think?
But, you know, the creepy thing about it is that, you know, we're talking about this fall being the fifth anniversary of the Occupy Wall Street movement. And you recall the images of occupiers being beaten up and being harassed and being bullied by entities that were basically acting as sort of the official oppressors of certain establishment forces in society, if you will. Mm-hmm. And you're seeing a replay of this, basically, that, you know, that if powerful forces don't like an activist message, you can use the official forces of, shall we say, punishment to basically stick it to these protesters. You're basically declaring protest illegal, declaring mm-hmm. protest mm-hmm. criminal, declaring protest unconstitutional. So if you try to use your voice, you will have a figure of authority literally reach into your mouth and rip your voice box out. That's essentially what's going on here.
Right. Well, I think it's the fact that the challenge to the established, I mean, everyone gets scared by a challenge to the way things are, right? Mm-hmm. Change is scary. And mm-hmm. I think that people react. And again, it's not I'm not sure it's a accusation against anybody, any particular member of a police force, but mm-hmm. their role is to maintain order. And mm-hmm. Forces that represent change often are perceived as being less orderly. So you get this sort of heavy-handed response. Mm-hmm. And I think that as climate hawks, we need to be sort of preparing for that and not be surprised at intensifying scrutiny and reaction for the actions that we undertake.
Mm-hmm. But again, it just, you know, just as a point of comparison and just to show how disgusting what has happened to Schlossberg is, you remember he was arrested and put in jail for 16 hours during a protest in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and then he was released. People made the point that there was no real reason to arrest him. Mm-hmm. It was just basically a way to sort of intimidate him. Now, again, he was at least released after 16 hours. Dela Schlossberg is looking at 45 years. Yeah. That's just sick. I'm sorry.
Well, and that's one of these things that is not so much to punish her, but it's to send a message to everyone else.
Exactly.
Who might be thinking about doing something the mm-hmm. same. And it's well, there you go. We will keep an eye on that. So the other less than happy piece of information, but again, that represents the reactionary forces that are awakening. We've talked before about Maura Healey, who is the Massachusetts Attorney General, who has begun mm-hmm. an inquiry into whether or not ExxonMobil is guilty of fraud in not telling its stockholders about the risk of climate change. Mm-hmm. So round and round and round, it turns out that that Lamar Smith, maybe help me make sure I get this straight, right? Lamar mm-hmm. Smith has sent a subpoena to a state attorney general. So Lamar Smith is a U.S. federal representative from Texas, from the mm-hmm. state of Exxon. He has sent a subpoena to Maura Healey for all her internal documents. Exxon went to court to enforce that subpoena, and mm-hmm. a judge in Texas agreed that Maura Healey has to provide all of the internal documentation surrounding her effort to probe Exxon. Did I get that story right? I mean,
yes, it's interesting. Exxon has not only been pushing to try to get the subpoenas that Maura Healey and Eric Schneiderman, the New York Attorney General, issued to try to have those thrown out by a federal court. They've also successfully gotten a federal judge in Texas to basically grant them the right to take a look at Maura Healey's emails, essentially to try to prove Exxon is claiming that Maura Healey basically hatched some sort of backroom deal with climate hawks to basically go after ExxonMobil. So they apparently now have the right to start digging through her, according to the Washington Post, internal phone records, other communications and depositions related to the Exxon case, in an attempt by Exxon to try to find something that they can hold up as a smoking gun and say, aha, this was the political witch hunt on the part of Maura Healey.
And mostly, if I could say, it's an attempt to throw Maura Healey's office into chaos and force them to spend weeks and months generating all the right data and then answering questions about how come you didn't send us more data, right? It's just this technique of harassment.
Or ultimately to get Maura Healey to withdraw her subpoena, similar to how Claude Walker, the Virgin Islands Attorney General dropped his subpoena under some still unusual circumstances. Federal Judge Ed Kincaid noted that, quote, the anticipatory nature of Healey's public statements raised questions about whether she might have acted in bad faith in launching a broad investigation. And the Washington Post noted that Mr. Kincaid was appointed to the U.S. District Court bench by President George W. Bush in 2002, something that everybody should keep in mind of about the importance of the federal judiciary in terms of energy and environmental cases.
Just saying.
And it'll be interesting to see if this gets appealed. If this decision gets appealed, of course, it would be appealed to the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is known to be a very, very pro-fossil fuel appellate court.
Really?
So we'll see if the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals upholds this ruling, if it goes to the Supreme Court, and how many judges will be able to hear it. It is just.
But I mean, it demonstrates the legal, you know, you get all the justice you can buy, right? So mm-hmm. Exxon has more money than God, and mm-hmm. they have enough lawyers to try and make this kind of harassing effort stick. Mm-hmm. And so we're just going to have to watch it. I mean, God bless Maura Healey for undertaking this, and I hope it is not too disruptive to her office. I mean, the judge didn't actually stop the subpoena. He just said you have to go through this, what's called the discovery phase, right, where all the documents are turned over. But I guess, does Exxon have to turn over its documents as well?
Apparently not. It appears not to be the case, although you do wonder what will happen if the appeals court will say that Exxon has to turn over its own records too. And we have to note that this is it going on at the same time where Exxon CEO Rex Tillerson is once again doing his sort of a baby face act, where he's saying, yes, we recognize that climate change is real. We're for a carbon tax. We take this seriously. And yet, as Senator Sheldon Whitehouse of Rhode Island has noted, they still haven't gone around. It's just right on the tip of their tongue to get around to actually lobbying to actually get a carbon tax implemented, or to sort of stop running these ads on you know, MSNBC and CNN that are widely seen as intimidating these networks into not doing more extensive coverage of a climate change issue. It's just one of these sort of weird. It's like Exxon they seem to have sort of more personalities than Sybil at this point. Basically, it's like the United States of Exxon.
We will keep an eye on all these stories, and what we'll do is we'll put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on TuneIn Radio. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on SoundCloud. So, DR, we will close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So thank you very much for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.